This is the Winchester Talking newspaper for the week ending the 4th of February, 2022.
Concentrate.
Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of February, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Richards. The main headlines this week are campaign for citywide 20 mile per hour limit, Prince of Wales to unveil new statue, last-ditch appeal to save threatened shops. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Which was campaign for citywide 20-mile-an-hour limit. Campaigners are again pressing for a citywide 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in Winchester. James Batho, a Liberal Democrat, has revived the Community Speed Watch initiative, whereby volunteers monitor traffic speeds in the city. Details are passed to the police, although no prosecutions result from anyone caught speeding. Mr. Batho addressed the town forum, saying he wanted the 20-mile-an-hour limit at places where people shop, play, work and learn. Mr. Batho, who campaigned against the Royaldown plans for Newtown between Winchester and Hursley last year, said the 20-mile-an-hour zones were being forgotten. He said the County Council needed to consider new signs and to repaint 20-zone road markings. Councillor James Scott, a Conservative councillor, thanked Mr. Batho and the Speed Watch volunteers for their work. "I clocked you on Stanmore Lane. It's a great job you're doing. In Stanmore, some of the signage is shambolic." Councillor Paula Ferguson said in Stanmore parents were afraid to walk to school with their children because of traffic speeds. Councillor Derek Green, who lives on Battery Hill in Stanmore, told the forum that some drivers go down the road at 40 to 50 miles an hour. "I stood in the road and told a guy he had to slow down. He had to because I wouldn't move. I said it's 20 miles an hour and got told to go away and his hand came out in a gesture. The only way to stop it is to put down humps, in the road and make them bigger. The Winnell humps slow traffic down. The Stanmore ones are broken up and people don't take notice of them." Mr. Batho said that in the 20 zones on North Walls, Hyde Street and Stanmore Lane, some 50% of the drivers broke the limit. In the 30 to 40 zones in other parts of the city, the offenders were around 10%. Councillor Kelsey Lerney said the key thing was not infrastructure, but paint, signs and the will to do it. The Chronicle spoke to parents outside Stanmore Primary School. One parent, Johnny Clifton, said, "The thing with Stanmore Lane is that it is so narrow, you struggle to get above 15 to 20 miles an hour anyway, because you're constantly letting cars come and go. There's still a lollipop lady here. I see her every morning and have used her a couple of times. As a parent, I think it makes sense that they introduce this limit." Ian Herring, retired head teacher of Bitton Junior School, said, "What really is needed is instead of introducing these speed limits 24 hours a day, which people will ignore, what they need to do is put flashing lights on. This is what some counties do. They put flashing lights either side of the school and a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in the morning and in the afternoon." Hampshire County Council has formed a task force to look at 20-mile-an-hour zones across the country. The group will examine whether existing zones should remain and which areas need the reduced limits. Councillor Martin Todd, who will be in Hampshire County Council's working group on the issue, expects to find more roads that need 20-mile-an-hour restrictions. He said, "At the moment we have a mixture of 20-mile-an-hour zones and certain streets with the restrictions, but you then have roads in between that are still 30 miles an hour, especially in Winchester. Perhaps the simple answer is to just finish the job in this regard. It's my understanding that slower speeds are not better for the environment, not only better for the environment, but also mean vehicles do less damage to the roads."
Prince of Wales to unveil new statue. The Prince of Wales will unveil the statue of Licorice of Winchester next month, it has been revealed. The sculpture outside the Discovery Centre on Drury Street will be blessed by the Chief Rabbi of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth, Ephraim Mervis, on Thursday, February the 10th. The Prince will meet a range of local people and children, as well as representatives from the different faith communities who have supported the Licorice project and leading figures from the Winchester and Hampshire. As reported in the Chronicle, Licorice was the leading community figure in the 13th century. Despite being widowed twice, she successfully brought up her family, conducted her business and prospered in hostile society. She was a major financier to Henry III and his queen, Eleanor. Money raised from Licorice and from the estate of her second husband, David, contributed to the building of Westminster Abbey and its rich shrine to Edward the Confessor. She was murdered along with her Christian maid in the city. The project to install a statue of Licorice aims to inform people about England's little-known but important medieval Jewish community, to be a fresh gateway to the study of Winchester's royal medieval past, and to promote tolerance and diversity in today's society, to inspire women and to show the importance of education in providing opportunity, and to be the last artistic enhancement to the city of Winchester. Maggie Carver, chairman of the Licorice Appeal, said, "The trustees are deeply honoured that His Royal Highness has agreed to unveil the statue of Licorice of Winchester. In doing so, the Prince marks the historic importance of the medieval Jewish community in Winchester's royal past and the continuing importance of strong interfaith understanding. We also greatly welcome the presence of the Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis and other faith leaders. His blessing of the statue will celebrate the challenging history of Jews in England across 1,000 years and embody the continuing need to educate citizens of today about the relevance of their shared heritage in creating a better society." And there are two pictures, one of His Royal Highness, and then there is a scale model of Licorice, and she is a lady in medieval costume, and she is holding the hand of a young boy.
A last-ditch appeal to save threatened shops. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a Mr. Andy Lai outside his Suki market in Kingswalk, and he's looking very, very concerned. A city council chief has said that a key priority is to breathe new life and activity into King's Walk. It comes as Winchester City Council has given Sunflowers Emporium and Suki Market until February to leave their current locations at King's Walk, leaving both frustrated and confused by the decision. It forms part of the City Council's long-term plan for the area, to revamp the current setup to create an arts and creative hub. Former Winchester City Council election candidate Andy Lai raised concerns about the two shops and asked for more support at a meeting of the full council. But Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, ignored Mr. Lai's plea and did not mention the businesses affected. Mr. Lai said, "Local businesses are struggling to get afloat or to stay afloat as we all get used to living with COVID. Independents in particular depend on the support of their local councils to make sensible decisions to help keep them trading. Despite this, we are seeing two businesses being evicted from King's Walk, and barely a week goes by when we don't read of a business having to close their doors due to their council landlord not being prepared to come to sensible accommodations on rent and other charges. How will this administration commit to supporting the local business community?" In response, Councillor Lerney said that the council is fully committed to supporting the local business community and has provided about £50 million worth of grants to support businesses affected by COVID-19, with further grants available. Councillor Learney said. The council is also committed to bringing forward the long-awaited Central Winchester Regeneration Area to deliver the vision of the Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning Document and bring resilience to the local economy. To support our local and independent creative businesses, a key priority is to breathe new life and activity into the area in and around King's Walk, which will be an important step towards the longer-term transformation of the wider area. The cabinet member told Mr. Lai that further initiatives, which will continue to raise consumer awareness and drive footfall.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum, and that will be followed by announcements. So today's death announcements. Akbar Anthony Reza, known as Tony, died peacefully on the 21st of January, aged 93. Bailey John died at home on the 17th of January. Davis Jeremy John Atwood died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 85. Parker Robert Ian died peacefully at home in Danemark Court on the 14th of January. Reed John Leonard Reed died peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 87. Southwick George Anthony Southwick died at the Royal Free Hospital, London, aged 74. Trimmer, Arthur John Trimmer, died peacefully at home, aged 88. Andrew, maybe have the Christian comment, please.
And this week's Christian comment comes from Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church, and it's entitled Tensions on the Journey. My wife and I recently finished viewing Around the World in 80 Days on BBC iPlayer. We don't normally binge-watch TV shows, but this adaption had us hooked and ended up being a great distraction from the COVID winter blues. David Tennant plays Phileas Fogg, a repressed upper-class Victorian Englishman who inhabits a very small world until his decision, on a whim, to take a risk and expand his horizons, which very quickly takes him out of his comfort zone. It's a big, bold story, full of risk and courage, as he and his unlikely travelling companions overcome the many natural and man-made obstacles involved in circumnavigating the globe on a deadline. Despite the vast physical miles covered, as you might expect, the real journeys happen internally, as each of the three central characters face their own challenges. The story is driven by inevitable relationship tensions as they figure out their motivations, adjust their expectations, and eventually grow into a close and supportive friendship. And throughout the whole piece, of course, is an underlying question. Will they achieve their goal and make it back in time? Tension is what makes the best narratives work. Whatever the genre, be it drama or fantasy, biography or documentary, sci-fi or sport, it's the tension that drives any story forward. Tension between characters, between values, and between dreams and desires. Tension is what makes us turn the page in a book, or keeps us on the edge of our seat. It's ironic that while tension makes the best stories, no one really wants to live through it in real life. Given the chance, I suggest that most of us would choose a simple and comfortable existence, free from the stresses and anxieties of life, as if that were possible. But tension is what leads to growth. It is when we face the misunderstandings and deal with the shortcomings that we learn courage and resilience. It is when we push through our fears that we grow in character. And it is when we acknowledge our vulnerability and choose to put our trust in God that we can know his greater perspective on our lives. As Paul encourages the Philippian church, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ. There is no circumstance that God cannot help with or doesn't want to hear about. As we approach him in thankful prayer and present our fears and requests to him, he promises a supernatural peace which transcends all understanding. For me, this is the main way I draw the strength and courage I need to face the inevitable tensions involved in stepping out of my comfort zone and trying to make a difference in the world. It is a very real conversation based on a very real relationship with God, and one which I have been journeying with all my life.
Thank you, Andrew. And now we start the letters, with yours being the first one, please, Nikki.
And it's from Tim Fell, headed Andover Road. Sir, the article headed Buses on Andover Road Questioned, Chronicle January 27th issue, overlooks another important consequence of the proposed closure of Andover Road North, or indeed of leaving it open for buses only. Either of those options would surely encourage drivers heading towards the city centre to take the parallel route down Priors Dean Road and Berwick Avenue and down to the crossroads with Stony Lane. There are already collisions at that crossroads several times a year, most recently one that required the attendance of two ambulances as well as the police. It must surely be likely that closing Andover Road North or restricting it to buses will lead to fatalities at these crossroads and to the Highways Authority, then having to take out compulsory purchase orders on the three houses adjacent to the junction and build a roundabout with traffic lights. Some joined-up thinking on this issue is urgently needed. Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Week, Winchester.
And Edward Hopper writes on a positive project. Excuse me. Sir, I write to draw attention to the worthy enterprise which seems to have not been mentioned in the local press. It is the bookshop sited at the lower level of the Brook Centre by the Global Education Trust charity. The object of the trust is to encourage, support and promote literacy. More information is available on their website, which is as follows: www.globaleducationaltrust.org. The premise of the shop is that the stock of books are offered to the public for free in return for voluntary donation. They are grateful for donations of books, shelving, and of course financial nature. The shop is vacant premises near Primark and has been in operation since last August. It is managed by Mark and his fellow friendly and helpful volunteers and is open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Thursdays, Fridays and Sundays. There is an additional benefit that the donated books are saved from being destroyed and sent for pulping. Stocks of books is wide-ranging and in very good condition. It is heartwarming to see and find people of all ages, from lifelong ageing bibliophiles like myself, down to the little ones looking at their first picture books and storybooks, all united by the delight and the love of books can bring. There is something there for everyone, and in my opinion, it's worthwhile cause deserving to be better known. And that's from Edward Hopper, Brassey Road, Fulford, Winchester.
And our next letter is from Karen Barrett, and is titled Job Qualifications. Sir, by coincidence, the £19,992 a year that pharmaceutical company Sigma paid Steve Brine is almost exactly equivalent to the annual salary received by a relative of mine who works in the NHS. Given that she and many others work full-time for such a remuneration, and probably know more about the health service than any former junior minister, I am wondering what exceptional circumstances persuaded Sigma to employ an already well-paid MP for 96 hours at a rate so much higher than the national minimum wage. There must be thousands of essential but low-paid NHS employees who jump at the chance to offer Sigma advice and expertise in return for such a lucrative contract. Sadly, an inability to facilitate access to government decision-makers would rule most of them out of this particular, quote-unquote, job. And that's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Fulfloat, Winchester.
And from Tessa Robertson of the Diva Society, headed Misleading Claim. Sir, many Winchester residents will have had the January-February edition of the Winchester Conservatives newsletter in touch through their letterboxes last week. The newsletter's front page article, 53,000 More Houses for Winchester, has caused some confusion in the district, particularly the implication that a number of large greenfield developments, including the 8,300 home new town proposed at Mitchell-Deva, would need to be built and our rural landscape would be swallowed up forever. The 53,000 house figure in the newsletter refers to a wish list of sites known as the Shellaa, S-H-E-L-A-A, submitted to the City Council in 2021 by developers and landowners. Councils across the country, whatever their political makeup, are required by national policy to publish these lists annually as part of their work on their local plans. The Conservatives published their own version in 2018 when they controlled the City Council. The number of new houses submitted by developers and landowners was then 41,000. Winchester District will not need to build anything like 53,000 new houses. The actual figure required by 2039 is 14,000. But as 11,300 of these are already in the pipeline, the City Council in fact has to find sites in its new local plan for 2,700 new homes. After a public consultation held last year on where these homes should be built showed unequivocally that Winchester residents did not support a large new greenfield development in the district, the City Council decided last September to take forward a development strategy for the new local plan that rejects new settlements. We should be working to ensure that they stand by this decision so that the proposed new town at Mitchell-Deva does not become part of the new local plan. Tessa Robertson, Chairman, the Diva Society, Mitchell-Deva, or Deva.
And I now have a picture of Barry Cryer, a show at Theatre Royal Winchester, remembered by John Miller. He had the most inventive wit. Sir, I think many of your readers will be saddened, as I was, by the news of Barry Cryer's death, especially those who packed the Theatre Royal in 2011 when I invited him to the Winchester Festival. He had the most inventive wit. He and Colin Sell, his pianist colleague from the I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, entranced the audience and looked so relaxed on stage. So I was interested to find him in his dressing room immediately afterwards, looking exhausted. He said, "Can I have a 10-minute rest before going on out to the book signing?" But none of that physical strain showed in his performance, and I thought, what a pro. He will be hugely missed by so many people who enjoyed his comic inventions over the years. And that's from John Miller, Alsford Road, Bishop Sutton, Alsford.
And this is a letter from Andrew Rutter about our famous, or shall I say infamous, River Park development. So, in all the suggestions for changes in this area, I have not heard any suggestions about enhancing or extending the pedestrian/cycle routes associated with it. I believe that a lot of residents enjoyed cycling to and from the old leisure centre and should now be encouraged to cycle to the new one at Bar End, as it's not a hilly route. This would require a new east-west connection across the valley to link existing routes to the route of Water Lane to Derngate. Once there, one has access to the Weirs, Wharf Hill, Doman Road, and the existing path over the bridge to come out at Bar End without having to use the congested Chesil Street. Similarly, young people in the Winall St Giles Hill area should be encouraged to go to and fro to their secondary school and sixth form college, like our boys did, without having to cycle through the city centre. Many art school students living in Erasmus Park in Winall, who have to come down Eastern Lane, Durngate, North Walls, could end their journey down the existing path beside the Itchen and then connect directly to the art college. Southampton University's interest in investing in this area might well be the key to enabling this connection to come about. The government recently announced a new initiative and funding to improve the connectivity of existing cycle/pedestrian paths. This would require a comprehensive landscape and engineering appraisal and design involving bridges. It would require both the cutting down of trees and planting new ones to make the route attractive. No doubt Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust would want this route to be separate from their perambulation at Winall Moors. But any new major route into Winchester will be difficult to implement, but this would seem to have a lot going for it. And that's a suggestion from Andrew Rutter, St John's Wood, Winchester.
Thank you, Andrew, and that concludes the correspondence to the Chronicle this week. We move on to Chronicle Comment, which we read for us by Nikki.
And which is headed, 20 is more than plenty for city roads. Research shows that lower speeds result in fewer collisions. One of the obvious benefits of fewer collisions is fewer injuries. Anybody who has ever been affected by a road traffic accident will tell you of the devastating effect the injuries that result from these incidents can have. That's why the Hampshire Chronicle is proud to back the calls for 20-mile-an-hour limits to be brought to our city streets. A successful trial in Portsmouth has seen the lower limits brought into its streets at low cost and with minimal inconvenience to local residents. Wales is about to implement a 20-mile-an-hour national default for residential roads too. The General Assembly of the United Nations endorses 20-mile-an-hour speed limit where people mix with motor vehicles. These are just a few of the reasons for a county-wide push for the 20-mile-an-hour zones. The 20's Plenty for Us campaign has joined up more than 500 local groups that are campaigning for local authorities to take action. And it's hard to argue with the facts that simply bringing in a lower limit can not only make our area a better place to live, it can also save lives.
Thank you, Nikki. And Norma, over to you for first person, please.
And Khalid Aziz writes, no parking, please. Parking. Don't you just love it? It's great to find a spot when you drive somewhere. Not so great when you have to pay. I used to feel the same up to a couple of years ago until I was elected chairman of the Gilbert White House and Gardens in Selborne on the eastern edge of the county. With the job came the thorny issue of resolving our car parking problem. We had a car park with a room for about 60 cars. The trouble, although it was often full, mysteriously our museum wasn't. Walkers were arriving, parking for free, and then marching off to enjoy the wonderful countryside, often starting with the Gilbert's famous zigzag walk up the Selborne Hangar. Tired and no doubt in need of sustenance, the walkers would return hours later, but only a few would venture to the 100 yards to our cafe and avail themselves of our excellent tea and coffee and our out-of-this-world cakes, coffee and walnut in particular favourite. The rest would either drive straight home or sit in their cars guzzling from Tupperware and thermos flasks. Sometimes our car park visitors didn't even bother with the walking bit. The last straw came when I witnessed a transit van disgorge a family of around 10, unpack the table large enough to accommodate them all, set it up across several parking spaces, and sit down to a plein air repast in the dappled summer sunshine. So we decided to charge for parking, fully refundable if you visited Gilbert's house or made a minimum spend at the cafe. Not too much to ask, you would have thought. Well, We might as well have demanded people to bring forth their firstborn for ritual slaughter. Complaints came thick and fast. We've always parked here. It's a free land. What about the right to roam? That this last remark from people who would no doubt take great exception to someone parking or even turning in their driveway. Eventually, we obtained planning permission to erect cameras and suitable signage. We had a 2-week bedding in period, and even after that were pretty benign about and forgiving for those claiming they hadn't understood the new charges. Excuses would rival J.K. Rowling for imaginative creativity. Some claim that they couldn't see the signs. There are 13 of them. Others wrote, threateningly in the electronic equivalent of green ink, about how their human rights were being eroded. 6 months on, and things pretty much settled down, and the charges produce a tidy income which will go some way to maintaining the car park and contributing to our charitable activities. What's more, increasing numbers of people are parking for free by venturing down to the house for coffee, cake and cake, which was the aim of the exercise. Now Hampshire County Council is considering taking over Alresford Parking to establish unified parking policy across the county. Why? Since the bypass was built and the large lorries no longer thunder through the town on their way to Winchester or Alton, Alresford has been charm personified. It has become a great place to visit and have coffee or lunch. Parking be tight, but the current arrangements seem to work well with free parking on Broad Street of up to 2 hours. If you cannot park on street, you can always pay for parking at the Watercress line. Business reply on people coming to the town to do business, i.e. buy something or have lunch. That's how it should be. My strong advice to the County Council is to leave well enough alone. In fact, they should go the other way. Alresford businesses themselves should have a major say in local parking policies. After all, they pay enough in business rates. The last thing local businesses need as they emerge from the ravages of COVID is people being discouraged from visiting the town because of a county-wide unified parking policy.
Thank you very much, Norma. And now Andrew's going to treat us to Belgarum.
And this is an alternative look at the news. And I put this in context. This is come to by a couple of photographs, but the first photograph shows what looks like a barren landscape, in so much as the hedge has been completely decimated, which sets the tone for the article, which is titled "The Hedge is Chopped Down, But All in a Good Cause." A hedge has been cut down by a nature reserve near Winchester, but before anyone gets too excited, it's all in a good cause. Things are not what they may seem at Deacon Hill Nature Reserve off the Morstead Road. The hedge is being coppiced with the support of the South Downs National Park and the Hampshire Wildlife Trust, greatly boosting its ecological value. Coppicing is the ancient practice of cutting trees back to a low height and thus encouraging a burst of growth in the spring. The hedge will grow back denser and be a better quality habitat. A public notice on the gate said that the hedge had become gappy, with crucially little growth close to the ground. And it said, "We understand the coppicing operation looks like a big impact on the hedge, but it regrows and will provide a better habitat for a range of birds and invertebrates. We will also be installing a new stock-proof fence, allowing grazing to take place, an essential activity for improving the wildlife value of the chalk grassland site. Deacon Hill was purchased by the Trust to create a wildlife corridor between St. Catherine's Hill and Magdalen Dam." And there's a second photograph here which shows in detail the public notice and shows the hedge as it was, so that you can see what their target is in terms of its regrowth.
Thank you. Now, this week's announcements. Lighting up time ends on Friday, the 4th of February, at 7:38 a.m. and begins at 5:01 p.m. On Wednesday, the 9th of February, it ends at 7:30 a.m. and begins at 5:10 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with further items of general news.
I'm going to finish, by the way, says Bishop. That's the heading. The Bishop of Winchester broke down during the cathedral service that marks his retirement. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, 63, had laid up his pastoral staff on the altar and was needing to say a final prayer, starting with, God of beginning and endings, when his voice started to break and several times he had to take a pause of several seconds to compose himself. After the third pause, he said, I'm going to finish, by the way. When he did force himself to finish, there was sustained applause from the congregation. The choral evensong in a packed cathedral marked his retirement after nearly 10 years as bishop. He officially retires on February the 6th, his 64th birthday. His tenure has been controversial, with unhappiness over his management style. A letter from a group of people in the diocese led to the bishop stepping down last year, before his retirement was announced last summer. A new bishop is due to be appointed, and in the meantime, the Bishop of Southampton, the Right Reverend Debbie Selin, will be acting bishop. And there's a lovely picture of the cathedral with the bishop and the congregation, and a picture of him smiling in a sort of inset. Anyway.
Cancer diagnosis stage concerns. Almost 2,000 cases of cancer diagnosed in Hampshire in a year when were not discovered until they had progressed to the most deadly stage of the illness. Cancer Research UK said there are concerns that survival rates could go backwards as a result of the coronavirus pandemic impact on the NHS. At least 1,923 cases diagnosed by medics in the NHS Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight CCG area had reached an advanced stage in 2019. There were 10,543 cancers diagnosed in Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight in the same year, and stage 4 diagnoses, which carry the greatest mortality risk, represented 24% of those. However, that was down from the 25% recorded the year before. Maggie's Southampton Centre offers support for those who have been diagnosed. Head of the centre, Jilly Howard-Jones, said, being diagnosed with the stage 4 cancer brings with it its own set of emotional and psychological challenges. It is well understood that early diagnosis is always best, so of course I would encourage anyone with any concerns to speak to their GP as soon as possible. But as Maggie's, we are here for anyone at any point, including before, during and after treatment, no matter the diagnosis. When people come to us with stage 4 diagnosis, they are often full of fear and anxiety, what awaits them in terms of symptoms and treatment, and always a big worry. We can help them in so many ways by talking through their emotions, arranging a session with our psychologist if necessary, discuss treatment options, help with money and even support people to find acceptance if that's what they need. We can also help them when it comes to speaking to the family and friends. In the area covered by the NHS Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight CCG, 43% of the 1,187 lung cancers detected in 2019 were at stage 4 when found, as were the 65% of the 328 pancreatic cancers.
This story is titled Food Pantry, and it's quite close to our hearts because The food pantry is where we, or a little studio attached to the food pantry, is where we do the recordings for you. The Winchester Community Food Pantry has been up and running in Winnall for nearly a year. Interest in the pantry is growing, and people come from all over the city and beyond to get more for less. The pantry was set up during the pandemic to help and encourage families needing a little bit of support to manage and budget through tough times. Since opening, membership has grown, and fortunately, so has the food supply. The food pantry manager, Elaine Chapman, works with various supermarket partners and other organisations to distribute food that might otherwise be wasted, therefore reducing waste and ensuring local residents have food on their tables. This Christmas, Elaine and an army of volunteers opened the pantry on Christmas Eve to provide members with all kinds of food items, including turkeys, canapés, Christmas puddings, a mountain of carrots, and so much more. Over 100 families and individuals came through the doors on December the 24th and were able to choose from a wide range of staple and festive food. Over the holiday, the Winchester Community Food Pantry Facebook group, whose members often share recipes, was flooded with images of Christmas dinners, and thanks to Elaine and the volunteers for their efforts to relieve food worries and bring joy to families over the festive season. The food pantry also facilitated the generosity of residents wanting to support others in their community. Multiple individuals and families approached Unit 12 and the pantry to offer donations of money, Christmas lunches, and presents for families across Winchester. Unit 12 director and Winchester City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "The Winchester Community Food Pantry is Unit 12's flagship project, and we are proud of what has been achieved so far. Funding from Hampshire County Council through the Household Support Fund is enabling the pantry to reach more people, and with the hard work of Elaine and the volunteers, it is hoped that everyone in Winchester will have access to the food they require." Unit 12 General Manager Henna Henshaw said, "In 2022, the food pantry is expanding its opening hours to support more people and cater to all working and life patterns. Anyone is welcome to come along and shop at the pantry. Each shop is £5 and includes a choice of fresh, frozen, and general food items. And if you're interested in becoming a member, pop along to the pantry or contact Unit 12 for more information." And I can say from a very personal point of view that we're sitting here in the studio and there's an amazing range of food and supplies that are on the shelves here. So it's doing a really good job.
Man loses 7 stone at weight loss group. A man from Hampshire lost 7 stone through a weight loss group in Winchester. James Shardlow, 41, joined the Slimming World group in February 2020 and is now experiencing the benefits of his weight loss. The HR professional said, "Like a lot of people, I found lockdown challenging. I decided to continue my weight loss journey with Slimming World virtual groups, which helped keep my motivation going. With so much in the news about weight and associated health risks, including COVID-19, I wanted to make a healthy new start and take my health into my own hands. When my local group, Susie's Winchester group, reopened, I was looking forward to seeing people again, and I haven't looked back since. I know it can be nerve-wracking to walk into a Slimming World group for the first time, especially at the moment, but I can assure anyone who's worrying about their weight that there's no judgment at Slimming World, just respect and care, and it's absolutely safe. I know that I was previously taking comfort in food and alcohol. As well as being able to share how we're feeling, being able to share ideas about how to enjoy delicious food and feel fitter and healthier has made a real difference, not just to my weight. It's helped me to have a much more positive outlook too. If anyone's worrying about going hungry, before I joined, I definitely thought losing weight meant I'd be starving. Don't. Slimming World's plan is about eating everyday foods and all your favourite meals. You just find out how to make small changes to how you cook them that make a big difference to your weight. James, who lives in Havant, explained that he decided to join Slimming World Group in Winchester because his shirt size has reached XXXL. He said, "My biggest struggle at first was I've never been a big vegetable eater. However, since joining, I have added different foods to enable my weight loss and have regretted not adding these sooner into my meals. I started off walking, gardening, and over time running and other activities. I believe that Slimming World is about little changes over time. These changes will show, along with these groups, with going to groups. It really motivated me to keep going, even when at times I've struggled, as I've always felt supported by the group members. I have to say I did it, and I can't endorse them more. They're brilliant. And there's a picture of him in his XXXL shirt, which I don't need to describe. And then wonderful, slim, trim, James, looking great.
And on the food market still, this is about a monthly market. A popular Hampshire village market is returning next month. The Ampfield Market takes place in Ampfield Village Hall between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. and will next be on February the 5th. The market has become a very popular meeting place, offering the best value, most delicious refreshments in Hampshire. Every effort is made to keep the sales table lively and interesting. There are top quality locally sourced items for sale, including cakes, biscuits, savoury foods, honey, fresh bread, eggs, plants, fruit and veg, crafts, books, cards, wrapping paper, jewellery and collectibles. The market generates £1,500 a year towards Village Hall funds. The team generously volunteer their time and baking skills to provide delicious seasonal selection of cakes every month, which are served with coffee throughout the morning. Later this year, the market will take place on March the 5th, April the 2nd, May the 7th and June the 4th, which will be a special event to mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. Actually, having read that, perhaps all those cakes aren't good for Slimming World.
Definitely not.
And I'm afraid we're going to continue the onslaught on Slimming World with another story about food. The cafe to raise funds for the cancer, for a cancer charity. Wanston Community Cafe, our first cafe of the year, raised a magnificent sum of £423 for the Countess of Brecknock Hospice. This wonderful figure came from sales of tea, coffee and cakes. Customer donations and a generous donation of £95 from sales of her artwork by local supporter Kerry Evans. Having studied art foundation at St Martin's, Kerry came back to painting during lockdown and made the move from acrylic to oil. Kerry recently lost a close friend who was looked after by the hospice and was honoured to be part of the Wanston Community Cafe and sell her paintings to raise funds for such a special place. The next community cafe will be at the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney, 9:30 in the morning till 12 on Wednesday, February the 16th. This month, the cafe will be raising funds for Young Lives Versus Cancer, which was formerly called CLIC Sargent. At Young Lives Versus Cancer, they help families find the strength to face everything cancer throws at them. We are a cash-only cafe, and last orders are 11:45 a.m., with lots of free parking, and donations to our monthly nominated charity are always welcome. And this is accompanied by a shot of some seven ladies with an amazing array of cakes in front of them that I assume that they have all baked, and they're looking very, very jolly. And the cakes do look extremely attractive.
Shop closes after 99 years. A much-loved shop that has been run by the same family for three generations is closing after 99 years of service. Corner Stores in Winchester Road, King Somborne, which is currently run by Richard and Sue Martin, as well as Richard's sister Sue, will close this weekend. The shop first opened in 1923, set up by Roper Martin, who passed it on to his son Dick Martin before Richard, Sue and Sue took over in 1993. Mrs. Martin said, "It's been our whole life for the past 29 years. We've brought up our whole family here. Richard has been here his whole life." The shop was hailed as a lifeline to elderly village residents, particularly through the pandemic, with Richard preparing and making door-to-door deliveries to ensure his customers had everything they needed. "We were really busy during the pandemic," Mrs. Martin said. "We were thinking of retiring before COVID, but what would we do just sat here at home? So we ran a delivery service and we were on the go from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. The family have now decided to retire to focus on their 9 grandchildren and take a well-deserved holiday before closing for the last time on Saturday, January the 29th. Speaking on how much time the shop had taken up, Mrs. Martin said, "It has become a big tie. We were open Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. We have a large family, but we just don't have the time to spend with them. So now we want to live a little with our 5 children and 9 grandchildren. It's time to spend time with them now. We've had a couple of people come into the shop saying they would manage it for us, but it wasn't for us. We want to keep it as a family business, and it wasn't right to sell it. We would have ultimate responsibility, but the time has come for us to retire and finish with it. The customers have all wished us well. Everyone's been very lovely about it. We have appreciated the support over the many years that we've been here. We've had some amazing customers, and without them, we wouldn't be here." And it's a lovely picture of Richard and Sue outside their shop, headed, surprisingly, corner stores.
When expensive works out cheap. One of our greatest local writers is the sadly missed Terry Pratchett. Because of the comic and fantasy settings of his novels, the depth of his work is sometimes overlooked. But his fiction has always fizzed with ideas and fizzed to the surface again last week in the most unexpected of places. When Boris clears away the empty bottles and beer cans in number 10, he will find rising inflation at the top of the government's in tray. For all the bluster about how Labour can't be trusted with the economy, the current rate of 5.4% is the highest since, well, since the Conservatives were in power back in the early 1990s. But as belt-tightening as the figure is, it doesn't reflect how prices have been in different parts of the economy. Jack Munro, campaigner and food blogger, has long kept a list of prices for his online recipes. What he discovered was that the cheaper end of the market, many prices have risen far higher than 5.4%. The cheapest 500-gram bag of Asda pasta has risen from 29p to 70p, a 141% rise. The value bag of rice in her local supermarket has increased from 45p for a kilo last year to a pound for 500 grams, a 344% increase. Enter Terry Pratchett. One of his much-loved Discworld characters is the policeman Samuel Sam Vimes, who rose from being born in poverty to marrying the richest woman in the city. Vimes is a character acutely aware of money, and in the novel Men at Arms lays out his boots theory of social economic unfairness. A good pair of boots, Vime noted, cost $50 and lasted 10 years. The affordable pair of boots cost $10 but only lasted 2 years. Vimes liked the cheapest boots as he could feel the cobbles through the thin soles and knew where he was on a foggy night. Over 10 years, Vimes realised a rich person would spend $50 on boots while a poor man would have spent $100 on boots in the same time and would still have wet feet. Jack Munro has taken up Pratchett's idea and with the permission of his estate is creating the Vimes Boots Index to track the rising cost of basic food prices. Dad would be proud to see his work used in such a way, his daughter Rihanna said. The basket of goods used to measure inflation changes over time, and in 1947 it included rabbit, corsets and mangels. In 1970 it featured a keg of stout, terrine slacks, and in recent years additions have included gin, bicycle helmets and jigsaws. Munro's basket, however, might be more accurately capture the real life in our own interesting times. And there's a picture of Terry Pratchett's men-at-arms and a pair of boots.
And back here we've got the bus station tribute to a lifelong busman. And this is accompanied by a series of photographs of David Shaw, who was very famous in the area with his commitment to the bus service. The funeral of busman extraordinaire David Shaw, whose death in December at the age of 90 has already been recorded, took place on Wednesday, January the 26th. This one-time King Alfred conductor, who started his bus career 65 years ago in 1956, had earned his place as a celebrated personality known to hundreds, indeed probably not thousands, of people in and around Winchester. David was cremated at Wessex Vale Crematorium in a private ceremony, but arrangements had been made for the funeral cortege, consisting of a hearse bearing his coffin and a double-decker 1956 King Alfred bus, his favourite, to pass through both the stagecoach depot at Bar End and the bus station in the Broadway. At 9:35 a.m. precisely, the sombre convoy entered the depot, where almost everybody working there had paused their activities to stand in line as a mark of respect as David's body was driven slowly through. It was a moving spectacle, repeated in even more spectacular style when the little convoy made its way sedately through the Broadway and into the bus station, this time with the funeral director walking ahead. The buses had all been lined up on one side of the Broadway, and the staff stood on the right-hand side. And they broke into spontaneous applause as the hearse passed through. James Freeman, chairman of Friends of King Alfred Buses, said today, "They were paying a fitting and indeed most moving tribute to a much-loved and greatly respected man who had spent his life giving out goodwill to others. He was still going to the depot at Bar End to make the tea for everyone well into his 80s. And the pictures here of him, probably where he'd be happiest, up on the bus. And that photograph was taken when he was 88. And again of the cortege with the hearse and a bus going through the going along the Broadway.
Pothole figures. Recent figures have shown that Hampshire has the second highest number of pothole reports in the country. According to Fill That Hole, Hampshire has had 6,112 reports from 2007 to 2022. This is behind Surrey, who have had 10,310 reports in the same time period. Of the total number of reports in Hampshire, only 16% of them have been fixed, meaning that there are 564 cases currently open and are waiting to be fixed by Hampshire County Council, Surrey. Hampshire County Council. Surrey have had 8,843 open reports. The most recent report of a pothole in Winchester is from January 22nd. It is on Berwick Road near Peter Simmons College and is described as being a danger to two-wheeled vehicles. It has an approximate size of 25 by 12.5 centimetres and a depth of 8 centimetres. Another report of a pothole comes from the B2177 near Wickham and just outside Rooksbury Park on January the 20th. This was described as a deep hole in the road, very obvious, about 30 centimetres from edge of road. A pothole was also reported on January the 14th near Sparshield College on the bend of Westley Lane. It was described as a massive pothole, which is 10 centimetres deep and 30 by 30 centimetres in size. At the start of January, a 50 centimetre long pothole was reported on Chilbolton Avenue near Royal Winchester Golf Club. Many of the potholes reported on the website do not give exact location, but do give descriptions of the extent of the road damage. Hampshire County Council have been contacted for a comment.
Planners approve new buildings on farm site. New buildings will be built on farm in the Meon Valley. Six new buildings were approved for Selhurst Poultry Farm, Heath Road in Soberton, near Bishop's Waltham. The application was voted for unanimously by Winchester City Council Planning Committee. Five of the new buildings will be for storage use, with one to be used as an office. The site is separated from the adjoining residential properties by mature trees, hedges and drainage ditch. Whilst the site is within countryside, it is established employment site used for industrial purposes. The plan was brought before the planning committee because it received seven letters of objection. Representing the objectors, Nick Wallace said, "I am happy with the development, however, I am concerned with the size of it. The amount of extra traffic the building would generate will cause anxiety on the roads." Ian Donoghue, for the applicant, explained that the site used to have chicken sheds and that permission was recently granted to move some old buildings and have new and replacement ones on site. The buildings are timber clad to reflect the countryside location and existing buildings. The key benefits are improved layout on the site. It's further from the residential properties and improved landscaping. I ask you to support this proposal and permit this application. Councillor Frank Pearson said, "Drainage in this county is an issue. If drainage is allowed to silt up without a management plan, it will create issues downstream at Newtown. It is important that the ditches are maintained." Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I think it will be significant improvement on the existing site. The new buildings have a much more attractive layout and I think it's a good use of the site. The new conditions attached to this development significantly improve what is going to be built there. The traffic management, the track and the access road and the landscaping and the biodiversity will improve it."
And some good news here. City pollution is getting better. Air quality has been steadily improving in Winchester, and it is now at a point where the area monitored for pollutants could be made smaller. Since 2003, Winchester's city centre has been a designated Air Quality Management Area, AQMA, meaning that it must have in place an air quality management plan with measures in place to improve air quality. Now, Cabinet Member for the Climate Emergency, Hannah Williams, has been asked if the Council has taken into account the revised advice from the World Health Organization, the WHO, on safe levels of certain pollutants. Councillor Charles Ratcliffe lodged the question, which was published as part of a full Council meeting. Councillor Ratcliffe said, "As councillors are aware, Winchester has an acute air quality problem, especially in the city centre. The current administration is to be applauded for taking steps to tackle this issue, including improved monitoring, stricter planning controls, and measures to encourage more use of car parks on the edge of the city centre. Even so, improvements in air quality recorded to date have, arguably, been modest, and from a public health perspective, insufficient. According to these new global standards, levels of nitrogen dioxide and the fine particle pollution in central Winchester are, on average, between 2 and 3 times the level deemed safe. On some days in the past few months, they have been up to 10 times the safe level." Councillor Williams said that she has acknowledged the WHO objectives, and she continued, During the past 18 years, Winchester's air quality has been steadily improving, such that it is expected that during 2022, we'll be in a position to make an application to central government, DEFRA, which would enable a significant reduction to be made in the size of the AQMA, with only a linear section along Romsey Road and the Upper High Street likely exceeding the current statutory limits. She added, Cabinet remains undeterred in its objective of improving air quality and public health benefits for its citizens and have tasked officers with investigating the feasibility of the Council adopting its own more stringent local air quality standards, which go beyond current national requirements. The Council has started the process to appoint a consultant to validate its current air quality results and what measures need to be put in place to improve air quality. The contract for this piece of work should be awarded by the end of January, and the draft report is expected by the end of April 2022. Councillor Williams said, We will then be in a position to undertake an informed review of air quality and to develop a future strategy aimed at delivering these further improvements, taking into account both national requirements and the WHO guidance.
Probe after police chase, fatal crash. A 40-year-old man has died following a police pursuit between Salisbury and Andover on Sunday. Police were chasing a silver Ford Transit Connect on the A343 at around 11 p.m. The van left the road and the driver, from Hythe, was pronounced dead before getting to hospital. No other vehicles were involved. The road was closed for several hours from around 11 p.m. between the B3084 Salisbury Road, Nether Wallop, and the A343 Lopcombe Corner. Officers said they were responding to reports of a burglary in Monkston. The incident has been referred to the Independent Office for Police Conduct as a result. A Hampshire Police spokesperson said, Officers are investigating following a fatal collision in Stockbridge. At around 11 p.m. on Sunday, January the 30th, police were in pursuit of a silver Ford Transit Connect on the A343. After a short time, the vehicle left the carriageway and came to rest in a field on Red Rice Road. The van was not in a collision with another vehicle. Officers had been in the area responding to reports of a burglary in Monkston. A mandatory referral has been made to the Independent Office for Police Conduct.
City councillors criticise NDAs. Excuse me. Councillors have criticised use of the intimidating and unpleasant non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, utilised by Winchester City Council. It has been revealed that the Council has been sending out NDAs to members of the authority to allow them to read confidential documents. More recently, they were used to allow councillors to receive exempt sections of the Central Winchester Regeneration Report. The first draft of these indemnity provisions, which meant that councillors would be financially liable for any loss that the council suffers. Conservative councillor Hugh Lumby asked the council at a recent council meeting how many members signed the agreement. In reply, he was told that 12 members signed the NDA with those indemnity provisions, 2 members signed a modified form of NDA, none of these were cabinet members. Councillor Lumby said, We have a mess right now and we do really need to get on and sort it out. The indemnity, it says, basically that you are liable for any loss that the council suffers way beyond. You don't have to mitigate, you don't have to evidence the loss that you've incurred. So you, councillors, just get a bill for it. And that is really intimidatory and unpleasant, and we shouldn't be doing it. His comments come after fellow Tory councillor Stephen Godfrey proposed a motion to make the council more transparent. It includes properly consulting all councillors and the public before making any significant decisions about council projects or other major financial transactions. publishing papers that were marked exempt after 12 months of decision being made, unless council decides that they should remain confidential. Recording the discussions, submissions and the decisions at all meetings attended by persons outside the council and stopping the use of NDAs. Councillor Godfrey said, legalisation already exists that prohibits councillors from disclosing information in documents identified as being restricted. Demanding that councillors sign a non-disclosure agreement, particularly when they include a clause that seeks to indemnify the council from any consequential loss or damage, is wholly unnecessary and heavy-handed. Councillor Brian Lamming said, finds it extremely insulting being asked to sign an NDA, and Councillor Frank Pearson said, to say I was a tad upset about the implication and that I could not be trusted without any sort of background or reasoning for that statement, quite frankly, I found insulting. An amendment was proposed by Councillor Neil Cutler to refer the motion to the Audit and Governance Committee to look at legality and practical and resource implications.
And this article is about our ambulance service and is entitled Life at Risk from the Time Wasters. Hundreds of time-wasting 999 calls are diverting precious ambulance service resources and putting lives at risk, the Daily Echo can reveal. South Central Ambulance Service is regularly hit by hoaxers, who are, quote, disproportionately resource and time-consuming. But genuine callers in need are also causing problems by first ringing 999 and then vanishing. For example, taking themselves to hospital before paramedics arrive. A Freedom of Information request by the Echo revealed 2,506 hoax and so-called no intervention calls in the 2 years in 2019-20 and 2020-21. Two Southampton MPs have hit out at the time wasters following this newspaper's findings. Labour MP for Southampton Test, Alan Whitehead, said it is shocking that people would be making hoax calls to the ambulance service at any time, never mind at a time when the health service is so stretched responding to a pandemic. Royston Smith, Conservative MP for Southampton Itchen, said not all of these calls will be deliberate or malicious, but a number will. Every time someone calls an ambulance unnecessarily, they risk another person's health or life. It is notoriously difficult to deal with this issue, but if and when perpetrators are apprehended, they should feel the full force of the law. The national average cost of responding to a 999 call is £69, meaning nearly £60,000 was wasted. An SCAS statement said hoax calls were very small, but disproportionately resource and time consuming. However, there are also times when we arrive on scene to care for a patient, only to find that they have disappeared or have managed to get themselves to hospital and therefore no longer need our assistance. In these situations, we would encourage people to let us know if their situation changes, so we can relocate the crew and the vehicle, thereby ensuring that our highly skilled teams are available when patients really do need their help. The total number of hoax and no intervention calls dropped in the second year of figures obtained by the Echo, and police work with paramedics whenever they receive nuisance or abusive calls.
Julita on mission for her homeland. A carer at a Winchester care home is raising vital funds for her typhoon-stricken island in the Philippines. Julita Guy, who works at the signature of Winchester care home, is from Cabulan. Last month, the island and the rest of the country were struck by the super typhoon Rai, RAI, which tragically resulted in more than 400 fatalities. Cabulan has no roads and relies solely on the fishing industry for income. The typhoon washed all of its boats away and decimated buildings across the island. Many of the island's 4,000 residents are homeless, have no fish to eat or sell, and have no means of reaching larger neighbouring islands to collect drinking water. Luckily, Julita's loved ones all proved to be safe, although her father's house was destroyed. In a bid to help those in a less fortunate position, Julita has launched a Just Giving page to help. Her aim is to raise £5,000, and generous friends, family and colleagues have already chipped in to help her amass more than 1,100 towards the rebuilding effort with help from her employer's Signature. She said, "The people in these types of places are very poor, but very resourceful. But resourcefulness is of no use when there is no way to get the materials needed to solve their problems. I am so grateful for all the help for the people and my colleagues that have been so generous and kind. I would like to thank Signature for their support and helping spread the word. It means so much to me and my family back home." On the day the typhoon struck, Julita came to work not knowing what had happened to her family, having lost all contact with them. Antoinette Roberts, general manager at Signature of Winchester, praised Julita's professionalism and added Signature was keen to support her aim, with colleagues contributing much-needed cash. She said, "I have worked alongside Julita for 9 years. She's a caring and dedicated member of the Winchester team. We see reports more and more often about natural disasters and the devastation that is caused. However, nothing hits home harder than when people you know are affected by these catastrophic events. We desperately wanted to help raise funds to help her family recover from the devastation. Thanks to support from Signature Senior Lifestyle and sharing the plight of Julita's family and friends, we have jointly managed to raise funds to provide essential food, water and equipment. We are so proud of Julita and what she has achieved to support the people in her community, and we are so grateful to have such a compassionate and caring person as part of our team." And there's a lovely picture of Julita in her Signature uniform with the most gorgeous smile. Really sweet person. Now, for the charity, if you want to give it, you have to visit the website justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Kabulan Typhoon. That's all one word, CABULANTYPHOON.
Murdered teenager not supported by police. Murdered teenager Louise Smith may not have received appropriate support because of the COVID-19 restrictions. A review of her care has been found. Shane Mays, 30, from Havant, was jailed for life and must serve a minimum of 25 years after being found guilty of killing the 16-year-old on VE Day in 2020. Louise, who was training to be a veterinary nurse, was brutally killed in Havant Thicket with her body defiled and burnt. The trial at Winchester Crown Court heard that Louise was vulnerable, suffered from anxiety and depression, and smoked cannabis. She had moved in with Mays and his wife, Charlene Jane, CJ, after quarrelling with her mother, Rebecca Cooper. A review by Hampshire Safeguarding Children Partnership has now revealed that Louise reported being raped by one of her peers a year before her death. It also found she was not given enough support when Hampshire police told her no further action would be taken over the allegation. The impact of COVID might have led to Louise not having a supporting professional there when she was informed, the review said. The report by an independent scrutineer, John Chapman, said the force should review its process when providing victims of rape and serious sexual assault with an investigative outcome. It should also put in place a mechanism to ensure that, wherever possible, this is done so in conjunction with supporting persons or professional present. May's murder trial was told Louise had a social worker, while the review said that at the time of her death, a children and families assessment was being done because she had moved from one extended family member's home to another and was considered at risk of homelessness. The review said that the agencies involved in Louise's care failed to make sure that there was a continuing support as she moved from school to college. It said she had gone from a child who could readily engage with professionals to disengaging at college and no longer assessing the support offered. It added, with the child in need plan drawn to an end, there is limited information to suggest that there was a continued strong collaborative multi-agency approach and her prior network of support had dissipated. In February 2021, the court appeal rejected the bid to increase May's prison sentence after the Solicitor General claimed it was unduly lenient. Lord Justice Davis, sitting two other judges, concluded the sentence should not be altered.
This is an article about a lady who's managing to combine work and charity. A dental nurse from Winchester has spoken about combining her job and her charity work. In her role at Bupa Mildfield House, Victoria is involved in many aspects of the practice, from administrative to clinical. She regularly deals with patient inquiries and guides patients through their courses of treatments and the options available to them, liaising with the clinician to create a bespoke treatment plan. Reflecting on her time in the role, Victoria said, "During my time working at the Bupa Dental Care Centre, Winchester, I have been offered the flexibility to mould my role into what I want it to be, and I'm grateful for the support from my manager and the business during my career, supporting with further education, dental experiences, and funding a future sedation course that I'm keen to explore." In her spare time, Victoria is passionate about charity work. She and her colleague, practice coordinator Louise Lewis, recently skydived to raise money for DentAid, holding a raffle at work and raising £1,700. Victoria regularly volunteers on the charity's mobile bus, which visits hostels, day centres and night shelters. Her charity work dates back 15 years when she started doing half marathons, something she still very much enjoys and continues to do. In addition, Victoria visited Tanzania with charity Bridge to Aid in September 2019 to help those less fortunate with their dental health. During this trip, she taught rural children how to brush their teeth effectively, what food and drinks to avoid, and hand out free toothbrushes and toothpaste. Emergency treatment was given to all who needed it, typically seeing 50 to 90 people per day whilst there. And this is accompanied by a picture of Victoria in the practice.
New recruits welcome to Hampshire Fire Crews. Hampshire Fire Service welcomed its highest ever intake of female firefighters during a recent graduation ceremony. Eight female candidates have been offered permanent roles following a successful recruitment drive. Two of the new Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service, HIWFRS, recruits will be based at Southampton Fire Stations. They include Chloe Chalk, who will be joining Hightown Fire Station. Meanwhile, Emma Gibson, who left behind her role as a care home assistant, will be tackling blazes with crews at St Mary's Fire Station. After completing a gruelling 20-week training course, the recruits were presented with a certificate at a ceremony in Eastleigh last week. Deputy Chief Fire Officer Shantha Dixon said, "I am delighted to see a record number of female graduates amongst our latest intake of firefighter recruits and offer my congratulations to all those graduating today. This is a momentous day for our new recruits who have all demonstrated our service values by showing respect, playing their part to support each other, and reaching further to fulfil their ambition of becoming firefighters working to make life safer across our communities." The graduates began their journey in September when they were split into two squads and welcomed by the HIWFRS Learning and Development Team for the first day of training. Learning and Development Group Manager Andy Weeks said, The role of a firefighter today is vastly different to what it was 10 or 20 years ago. Those beginning their careers now are taught a vast range of new skills suited to the modern fire service. Today, our firefighters are more community-focused than ever. They are required to provide emergency medical care and deliver important safety messages. Our graduates have displayed the professionalism and skill we expect of our firefighters.
Fundraiser a decade after horror crash. A Winchester woman is marking the 10th anniversary of a life-changing accident by raising money for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance on a 27-mile walk. In a bid to raise money for the service that saved her life, Zoe Robinson and her fiancé Cass will be setting off on their marathon distance walk from Zoe's house in Winchester to University Hospital Southampton, the hospital she was airlifted to exactly 10 years to the day of her accident. As she was driving along the M3 by Winchester services on February the 11th, 2012, Zoe's rear tyre blew, causing her to lose control of the vehicle and roll into a ditch. Paramedics quickly realised that Zoe needed to be treated by the air ambulance team, and Zoe was stabilised by the team and flown to the University Hospital Southampton, where she spent the next 24 hours in the neurological intensive care unit and a further 6 weeks recovering in hospital. Zoe said, "I was completely alone and I have no recollection of the accident. I had a traumatic brain injury which led to a bleed on the centre of my brain, a badly fractured pelvis and several broken ribs. After my stay in hospital, I got home to my wonderful daughters and I have Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance to thank for that," Zoe added. "I didn't know what year it was, what country I was in, or who the Prime Minister was. While it has obviously improved over time, my nickname is Dory from Finding Nemo, as I get distracted easily and can be forgetful."
And this article is accompanied by a photograph of the beautiful City Bridge in Winchester, and is entitled, "City Bridge is Dangerous." Calls have been made to improve the danger spot of the Winchester City Bridge. The 18th century bridge is the entry point into the city from the east, but is a hazard for pedestrians in busy traffic. Former City Councillor Ian Tate raised the issue at the latest meeting of the City Council Cabinet. He is calling for a new pedestrian footbridge next to the current structure to protect people from the traffic. Mr. Tate told the meeting, "As someone who tries to walk everywhere, I use the route over the Itchen Bridge many times a week, and what I regularly observe is the clear concern that many pedestrians have about their safety when crossing. Many people report their experiences of actual or near misses with vehicle wing mirrors, and also some aggressive behaviour from motorists when pedestrians have stepped into the road. I've measured the current pavement and it's only 1.08 metres wide, just enough for a standard scooter or a double buggy. But people coming the other way must either wait to cross or step into the road. The bridge is a wonderful structure and there are excellent views from it looking down the weirs, but only if you have the opportunity to stop. Although the current bridge, which was built in 1813, which I suppose is before cars, is a Grade 1 listed building, it must be remembered that first and foremost, it's a bridge. If we are to encourage more people to get out of their cars, then consideration of pedestrians is absolutely essential." He said the bridge is a pinch point that discourages elderly people from Chesil Lodge and Watersmeet from walking into the city. Mr. Tate said, "Some years ago, Richard Jobson, a director at Design Engine, did a lot of work on this very issue. And Richard prepared some excellent designs for a footbridge 1.5 metres wide to run alongside the existing structure. And Hayne Tillett Steele, a firm of structural engineers, devised a scheme to support the footbridge but without altering the structure of the existing bridge. And as we said, the photograph is taken on a lovely sunny day, blue sky, sun shining on the bridge. But it certainly highlights that for anybody going across there, when there's a lot of traffic, it is actually quite dangerous.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Richards, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.